This is Carolyn Jones for the You Now and Then project on July 22nd, 2019. I am the interviewer.
I am Ruth Miller, and I am the interviewee.
Well, Ruth, thank you so much for meeting me today. I'm so happy that we get to speak about your experiences and memories of You Now. But before we talked about that, I wondered if we could just talk about sort of general questions, which is, what brought you to Princeton? You didn't grow up in Princeton, is that right?
No. I grew up in New Zealand. But before I came to Princeton, I was living in Montreal. My then husband, who was English, was a plasma physicist, and he got a job with RCA down here.
What is RCA?
Well, like the RCA televisions and RCA, I mean, it stood for the Radio Corporation of America, and the labs were down here in Princeton.
Right.
I mean, it was an international company. And they had a plasma physics lab, and we came down here. I came kicking and screaming. I did not want to leave Montreal. I loved Montreal.
What year was this?
This was 1970.
Okay.
And we moved here, first of all, on Carter Road. Toby was only a few months old at that. He was 5 months old at that, 6 months old at that point. Then we bought a house right in Princeton on Wheatsheaf Lane, and the following year, my husband was killed in an automobile accident, and I had very little money. Excuse me. And I needed to get a job. And so I had done copywriting when I was in Canada, so I managed to get a freelance job doing some copywriting, but at some point I needed to. Simon, my older son, was in school. He was in kindergarten. But I had Toby, who was two, and somebody told me about this daycare place for You Now, and it was an absolute salvation for me. I got a scholarship because there's no way I could have afforded it, and that was it.
Before, I would love to learn more about mm-hmm. those early mm-hmm. days of You Now, but before we go there, can I just ask you a little bit more about what it was like in Princeton? So you arrived in 1970, mm-hmm. kicking and screaming from mm-hmm. the big city.
Right.
What were you resisting? What did you not want to embrace?
Richard Nixon was president, and all I knew about New Jersey was the New Jersey Turnpike. So I couldn't imagine coming to live in New Jersey. But, of course, Princeton is not really New Jersey, as Bertrand Russell used to say. He lived here for a short time in the Peacock Inn. And he said, the world does not intrude upon Princeton. Princeton intrudes upon the world. And that is sort of what I found. I mean, I came to love it here. Mm-hmm. Even though it's very unreal, or I think it's very unreal. And so I was resisting coming to New Jersey. I was resisting leaving Montreal, which is such a, it wasn't multicultural, but it was bicultural. And I spoke French in those days quite well. And so it seemed like I was coming to a fairly bland and uninteresting place.
Had you lived in America before?
No. Mm-mm.
So Princeton was your first experience of
yes.
America?
My first and now only. Oh. Well, I mean, I've traveled other places, but I've never lived anywhere other than Princeton since we moved here.
I'm so interested to hear you say that Princeton is not real. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's very precious in a way. Politically, it's where I am on almost everything, which is very unreal. It's not what America is all about. Everybody is, probably not everybody, but the kinds of people who I know are in favor of diversity and are worried about climate change, and they read, and so it's its own place, and very different from the majority of American towns, I think.
And so when you arrived here in 1970, what was the politics of the town like?
Quite different from what they are now.
Right.
In fact, it was all Republican. And when Bernie first ran for office...
Bernie is your husband.
Bernie is my husband, oh. Sorry. My second husband, when he first ran for office, he lost. There were no Democrats on... it was the township in those days, mm-hmm. on township committee when he ran, and there were none after he ran.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very ladies in pink and green and tennis shoes. And, yeah, it was very different from what it is now.
Right.
Yeah. Much more, the word I guess now is preppy, but...
Right. So, just for the benefit of listeners, perhaps 50 years in the future, when
mm-hmm.
you describe ladies in pink and green,
mm-hmm.
what does that mean?
There was a designer. Lily Pulitzer was the designer. I don't know that their tennis outfits were Lily Pulitzer,
mm-hmm.
but they were, you know, a pink T-shirt and a lime green tennis skirt.
And were these marks of affluence?
I assumed so. I did. They weren't people I knew, but I assumed that they all lived on Hodge Road in Princeton, which is a very upscale road
mm-hmm.
with big houses. I just assumed that was the real Princeton.
Right. And so these were ladies of leisure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Affluent
mm-hmm.
ladies of leisure.
Mm-hmm.
With them.
Mm-hmm.
So was that when you first arrived here, that was your sort of dominant vision of the Princeton women?
Well, the women I saw on the street,
right.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then with you, so you had a kindergartner and an infant
mm-hmm.
when you arrived.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you socialize with in those early days?
Well, once we moved into Princeton onto Wheatsheaf Lane, the first person I met was someone who had a child in the same kindergarten class,
mm-hmm.
and those boys were friends for a long time. And I used to walk him to school by their house.
This was your older son?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
with Toby and my younger son
mm-hmm.
in a stroller. And eventually the mother of this other child said, "Why don't you come in and have a cup of coffee?" And we became very close friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that Princeton was not all... she lived on Deer Path.
Right.
Actually, that's where Susan Dolly still lives,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I became friendly with Susan Dolly as
oh,
well.
Okay. So, moving forward a little
mm-hmm.
bit, this terrible tragedy
mm-hmm.
that happened to you, which must have been really
mm-hmm.
difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly you're a single mother
mm-hmm.
with two very young children.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you had started to think about daycare for Toby,
mm-hmm.
this must be 1972,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
What did you do for childcare before he was old enough to go to you now?
Oh, well, I was at home.
Okay.
It I was doing freelance copywriting. And interestingly enough, and I stopped all my credit cards and all that kind of thing. I still haven't been back to Sears, who were the only people who cancelled my credit.
This was once you'd been widowed.
Yes. And I did get some money from a workman's compensation claim that enabled me to keep paying the mortgage. Well, actually, yes. What I did with that money, actually, was to pay off the mortgage.
Right.
So that I had a place, so that we had a place to live.
Did you ever think about going back to Canada or back to New Zealand?
When my first husband died, my parents moved to England to be closer to me, which people in America find very funny. So I considered moving back to London. I had lived in London for 4 years before I, which is where I met my first husband. So I considered moving back to Canada and moving back to London. And then I was a little swayed by people who said, you know what, you've just had a major life event and you should wait before making a decision about another major event, namely moving house. And in my case, it would have been moving country. I spent the first summer, it must have been 72, in Canada with friends who are still my friends. And then when I came back, by that time Toby was 2 and I was able to have him go to you now.
And so had that been the plan? Had that always been the plan, that once he was old enough to go to UNOW, he would?
No, it never occurred to me I would work again. It was, 1970. It never... Well, I probably thought that I would eventually, but the plan was for my husband and me that I would stay at home with the kids. That was what one did then.
So tell me, you'd mentioned earlier, but if we could come back to that, when did you first hear about UNOW?
I've been trying to think about that. I don't know if it was from Susan Darley. I don't know how I first heard about it. I just knew it was my salvation.
That's a wonderful word to use. Can you go into a bit more detail about how that was a salvation for you?
Well... I needed to have a job, I needed to be working, and I knew that I couldn't stay at home with a 2-year-old and just ignore him. He was not the kind of child that you could ignore, even if that would have been a good thing for him, which I don't think it would. And then I got this scholar, I was told that I could... that he could go there and I wouldn't have to pay. And it just seemed like the best of all possible worlds.
It was 100% scholarship?
Yes.
Wow. And was the fact that it was full day, did that make a difference?
Yes,
too?
Made
were
a huge difference.
Were there
day.
Other options you've considered?
I thought about the University League, which was just mornings, as I recall. But my job was full time, was not just mornings. And I liked the whole idea of UNOW. I liked the idea of it being affiliated with NOW. Not that it was much of an affiliation, but I just liked that whole thing. And I don't think that the University League at that point took 2-year-olds. I think I was trying to remember how many people were in Toby's class when he was only two, and it was very small. It was somewhere at least five. I remember the names of all five, but I think there may have been a few more that I don't remember the names of.
Right.
But it, yeah, it was.
And how did you get the scholarship? Did you apply for it?
I must have.
Did someone speak on your behalf?
Yeah, probably. I don't remember at all. I don't remember that at all. I mean, I also had a scholarship, and I do sort of remember that, for Simon, the older child, to go to the Y after school program. And I don't remember much about that, but I know it was the Pearl Bates. That was the Pearl Bates scholarship fund that paid for him. I don't think it was Pearl Bates that paid for Toby. I think it must have been. I don't know. I don't know how I must have filled out paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at that point, I think I still only had something like $150 or something like that.
In your current account?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And was Toby there throughout his early child care education?
Yes.
So up until kindergarten?
Yes.
And was he on a scholarship the whole time?
As far as I remember.
Tell me, what do you remember about... Or do you remember anything about his first day bringing him to ministry school?
No, don't remember a thing about it. I mean, I remember what the routine was there and that they had naps.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the other kids, but I don't remember his... I don't remember taking him there. I don't remember him being resistant at all.
Right. Do you remember who the director was at the time?
Well, I assume it was Greeny, right?
Right.
Yes.
Yes. What do you remember about Greeny, the director?
I didn't, you know, it's funny. I didn't really, I mean, I knew who she was, and I knew that that was she, that person there. But I didn't know that much about her. I was much more familiar with Betty Harris and Betty Soloway and some of the other teachers rather than Greeny.
Right. And what do you remember about the teachers? You mentioned the two Betty's.
Yeah, they were wonderful. They were so simpatico and so great with the kids and warm with me, and particularly because Toby was so difficult. They didn't make me feel that it was my child rearing that was, although it might have been. I mean, he's still difficult and he's 49 years old. So I think it was something innate, but or maybe character forming actually there at UNOW. A real sense of who he knows who he is, and he's not compromising with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember about the strategies they would use with Toby and with the other children that you saw?
They were very verbal with them. They explained everything to them as if they were adults. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, they were firm, but clear. I always thought, now maybe it didn't seem that way to the children always, but that's the way it seemed to me.
And to what degree, from what we can tell, the philosophy of the school was very clear from the very beginning, very intentional about equality?
Yes, absolutely.
And how would you see that? I mean, you just mentioned the fact that they would speak to them as if they were equals.
Mm-hmm.
How would you see that philosophy of equality playing out?
Oh, well, I mean, the two girls that I remember from there, Leah and Khalida Lockheed. I don't know if she was Lockheed in those days, but whatever, Khalida, who was just gorgeous. It was as if they were all brothers and sisters. They were not treated any differently in any respect that I could tell at all.
Mm-hmm.
At all. And they were both, particularly Khalida, strong and saw themselves as equals.
And did this, had your older son, Simon, had he been to any sort of nursery school?
No.
Okay. And had you, as a child, gone to nursery school?
No. Had I? No.
So this would have been was Toby's first experience,
mm-hmm.
and yours too?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Right. And were you, did it meet your expectations of what a nursery school or a daycare, as it was called then, would be?
Well, my life at that point was fairly, I wouldn't describe it as chaotic, but there was a lot that seemed overwhelming to me. And so I was just, I didn't have expectations, I guess I would say. I was just grateful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was halfway through that I met Bernie, and we got married, and so life changed significantly, and Toby was not very welcoming of him, so I was just grateful that he was in a place that was safe and good and kind, and I didn't even care if he learned that much, although he did. He taught himself to read, and he did. I just thought it was wonderful that he was being taken care of in a way that was probably better than I could take care of. In fact, I'm sure it was better than I could have taken care of him.
Mm. Do you think that, given that you were a single mother,
mm-hmm.
You got special treatment, perhaps, right from the teachers?
I don't think so. I wasn't aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't aware of that. I might have, but they didn't make me feel different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another part of the philosophy of the school right from the start was about non-sex stereotyping.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something, do you remember that being part of your day-to-day experience that you know?
Yeah. I mean, that was what I assumed would be the case because of it being affiliated, as I thought, mm-hmm. with NOW. Certainly, it's the way Toby has grown up. Those beliefs have stayed with him his whole life. So, yes, I was very aware of that.
Mm. So you credit his beliefs from the You Now experience?
Oh, yeah.
How would they teach the children that?
Oh, just by behavior. I mean, not as a lesson.
Mm.
You will... but just by the way they treated everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. What do you
mean? And Joel, those people, particularly Joel and Leah, are still Toby's closest friends.
These are the children who were in his first class.
In his first class. Yeah. I mean, Joel is part of the fabric of his life. Even though they've had very different lives.
Mm. Do they still speak about their days at UNAM?
I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And Joel has his own children now, so maybe they do. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. I'll have to ask them.
Yeah.
You've mentioned a few times about the school's affiliation to now.
Mm-hmm.
If we can go back to when you first arrived in Princeton,
mm-hmm.
what did you know about the National Organization for Women?
Not when I arrived here, not a thing.
Okay. And what about the women's liberation movement in general? Was that on your radar?
It was on my radar. I mean, I wasn't an activist, but it was very much the way I'd been brought up,
mm-hmm.
As a feminist. Very much.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to marches or that kind of thing, but just the values of feminism. That was very important, certainly to my father.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's probable that you were also, your sons were getting that from home as well. So
possibly.
It wouldn't
mm-hmm.
just been from
mm-hmm.
you now.
Mm-hmm.
And then did the fact that the school had been founded by now members,
mm-hmm.
did that increase the school's attractiveness
yeah.
to
mm-hmm.
you?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it did.
And do you remember any discussions with your group of friends at that time talking about feminism or now or even the sort of broader issues of equality? Do you remember that being part of your day-to-day discussions?
You know, I didn't have a lot of friends here. My friends were mostly in Canada or in England. We moved here in December 1970. Oh, yeah, I'm just thinking back to who my friends were. And I was wrong about Simon and daycare, because when we lived out on Carter Road, he went to the Little Red Schoolhouse.
Oh, what was that?
Which was run by a woman named Lydia Gooding.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine my remembering that. And it was a very lefty, so I mean, it was called Red for political reasons.
Was this in Princeton?
Yeah. Well, it was Carter Road. Actually, technically, it was Lawrence.
Okay.
Lawrenceville.
Mm-hmm.
But it was he was there for a year and met someone whose family became very close to us. In fact, the mother slept in my bed with me the night that my husband was killed. But, well, not the night, but when I came back to Princeton.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so he was there for 1 year.
Yeah.
And then
mm-hmm.
he aged into kindergarten.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was a left-leaning school.
Oh, very.
What do you remember? How did you know it was left-leaning? What made it?
Well, I don't think I did when I first saw that it was there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in those days, if it was called Red, you sort of had an idea that it was probably fairly left.
Okay.
Nowadays, Red means something different, mm-hmm. but then the Little Red Schoolhouse. And when you first met Lydia Gooding, you knew perfectly well what her values were.
How did you know?
Because she was out there. She was very outspoken, and she ran this nursery school as an equal. I mean, equality was just drilled into those children.
That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard of it before.
Mm-hmm.
What became of the school?
Oh, I'm sure she's dead by now. She must, because she wasn't young then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now, I think, either a Chinese school or a French school or something.
Mm.
I drive past it frequently. It's
right.
not a nursery school anymore.
Okay.
It lasted for quite a long time,
mm.
But it's not there now. I don't know what happened to it.
Right. Did you ever think about enrolling Toby there?
No, because it was only, I don't know, 10 till 2 or something.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't a full day.
Right.
It wasn't daycare.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So thinking about when you arrived in Princeton and it was a majority Republican town,
mm-hmm.
quite conservative by the sounds of it, both sort of politically and, and culturally, did it seem to you that the Little Red Schoolhouse and you now were sort of up against the norms in any way? Did you feel that they were...
Oh, I felt very much at home in at them. They were my kinds of places. Up against the norms. You know, that was... I didn't know any of those other people. I really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved on to Wheatsheaf Lane in Princeton, before my husband died, they were all little houses, and I got to know most of the neighbors, and they were not of that kind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they were, I don't know what they're, in fact, the people next door to us, Simon and Toby used to say, were Russian spies.
Mm-hmm.
They were sure they were Russian spies because they wouldn't let them go over to their garden and get their ball when it went over theirs. So, I didn't...
Were they Russian?
No. I didn't feel alienated. I guess I had enough... You know, you're English, and...
I'm Zimbabwean, actually.
Oh, you're Zimbabwean? Okay. Well, I've never been to Zimbabwe, but... English people... sort of know where they belong and are quite comfortable mixing with people like themselves. We do now, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't care about those other people. I knew they would never be my friends. They didn't have the same values as me. So, I mean... You know, I'm sure, if you grew up in Zimbabwe, that in a way you always feel a little bit of an outsider. And coming from New Zealand, I very much have felt that way. I mean, New Zealand was, in the days when I grew up there, was very much based on equality. I mean, it was a very, very, I mean, it was almost a socialist country in those days. You got free bread, butter, milk, free dental care for children. The tax system was structured so that there were people who were paying almost 90% of a tax rate, wealthy people. So I had grown up with those values. And
how did that play out in your expectations of what a society should be once you moved to Princeton?
Well, it made me a Democrat, I guess. Not that that's the answer to everything either, but more of an answer than anything else. I felt that society ought not to cater to privileged people who were privileged anyway. Now Princeton was not as diverse a town then as it is now. So the issues of equality were not as... Well, they were stark in the sense that there were them and us, but not... you didn't feel you needed to... First of all, you didn't enjoy the mix of people in the way that one does now.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't... It wasn't in your consciousness to the same extent.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that the UNAL community was mixed and diverse?
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, I don't remember any black kids in Toby's class. Mm-hmm. But it was the wrong side of town for black kids to go.
They didn't live on that side near Broadmead.
No. It was still very much the Witherspoon-Jackson area, and Witherspoon-Jackson was not as diverse as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember black kids actually, so maybe it wasn't as diverse as it didn't occur to me at that point.
Were there other single mothers that you were aware of?
There, I mean, I did become friendly with several single mothers, but I don't think from you now that I was aware. There probably were in other classes. I really only knew the parents of the classes that Toby was in, and I knew pretty much all of them.
And so Toby was there for 3 years.
It must have been 72, 73, 74, and 75.
Okay.
So I think it was 4.
So he did kindergarten there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the group of friends that you spoke about in his first year, did they remain with him throughout those 4 years?
As I recall, I seem to think that maybe Matt Hewlett wasn't there for the last year. But I think everybody else was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what do you remember about the building itself, 171 Broadway?
Oh, it was ratty. It was a bit of a dump, yeah. But that didn't bother me at all.
Why not?
I didn't need for it to be pristine. I didn't need for it to be modern. Those were not my values particularly. I mean, the house I lived in on Wheatsheaf Lane was not that different.
Right. Did the university cast any shadow at all, or have any role in your experience that you know?
Not in my experience, no. I knew that it was sort of billed as a sort of creche. But I wasn't conscious of the university having any role there at all.
Mm-hmm. So do you remember faculty families being
there? Yes, I do remember faculty families being there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the Darleys, that's probably how the Darleys got to be there. And Michael Showalter, whose mother was there. Yeah, I do remember that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in the 4 years that you were there, did you see you now changing much?
Not much, no.
Right.
No, and I was grateful for that.
Right.
Yeah.
What was it like being a single mother of two very little children?
Yeah. Well, when I started work, I remember saying to somebody, a co-worker, God had, not that I ever believed in God, but if God had meant there to be single mothers, he would have provided them with housekeepers. I found it very frustrating. I mean, to be called in the middle of the day and told that your kid was not feeling well, you felt sorry for your kid, but it probably wasn't life-threatening, and it was difficult for you to get from your office to where your car was to get to car and pick up your child. And it was a challenge. And no, I didn't enjoy that status particularly. particularly. Mm. In fact, one New Year's Eve, I was putting Simon to bed, and he said to me, I said to him, "Happy New Year." And he said to me, "Is it going to be a good year?" "Oh, I'm sure it is." He said, "Are we going to find a father this year?"
Did you meet Barry that year?
Yeah, oh. As it happened. I said, "Well, I'll try." He said, "Well, are you looking?" And I said, "Well, not exactly." Mm. He said, "Well, have you tried the A&P? There was an A&P, that was an A&P where McCaffrey's is."
That's the supermarket?
Yeah. I said, "No, but that's a good idea."
Wow.
Yeah, he was very keen to have a father, as opposed to Toby, who was very keen not to have a father.
Right.
Oh. Simon is a much more traditional person than Debbie.
Mm-hmm. How was the transition from you now to kindergarten?
Oh, it was great because there was a woman named Evelyn Soldick at Littlebrook School who ran was he there for kindergarten? No, I thought he was at UNOW for kindergarten. Anyway, it was great. It was fine. And all the kids, you know, they were the same kids, mostly.
They, all of his friends went from UNOW to Littlebrook.
Mm-hmm. Probably not all of them, but the ones that mattered.
Right, so he arrived with his friendship group well established.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, he made lots of other friends there, but, yeah.
Right, right. And so, going forward, that was 40 years ago, what did you go on to do?
Me? I'd been doing freelance copywriting because that's what I did in England and in Canada. And but I needed something more than that, and I got to know some students and a faculty member from the university, a guy named Dan Seltzer, who that would be a whole hour talking about him, and one of the students told me about a play that they were putting on at Theatre Antime that they wanted a child for, and it was Wojciech, and Simon got the part in the play, and so that, and then they said to me, you know, you could get a job at the faculty club prospect, and I went and interviewed, and it was a perfect job. I was offered two jobs. I was offered a job at Princeton University Press, which was 8 till 5, and I didn't want to be behind a desk in an office, and I thought I didn't want to do that. And then there was this job at the faculty club, which was much more menial in the sense that it was like a receptionist, really. But it was, they finished at 4 every day. They really only served lunch, so. And they were not open in those days during the summer. So it was perfect timing for me. Mm-hmm. And I took the job there, and I was there for 3 years, planning special events, and it really became part. In fact, Bernie and I got married there. That's what I did for 3 years. And while I was there, I got to know many, many, many faculty members. And one of them offered me a job at the Woodrow Wilson School doing admissions, graduate admissions. And after 3 years at Prospect, I took that and I was there for the next 30 years at the Woodrow Wilson School in various roles.
And are you retired now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, looking back, obviously, so much happened after those early days. When you think about, you know, or when you used to think about, how would you remember it? What was the sort of the dominant memory of the place?
Oh, I remember how awful Toby was. That's what I remember, I guess. No, that's not fair. How difficult it was for me to understand him or cope with him, or I mean, he was kicked out of you now for a period of time, suspended, I guess, for pushing another child down a flight of stairs. I mean, he was just, they thought he was difficult too. But Greeny now remembers him with fondness. Mm-hmm. he had this bright red hair and black eyes. And he was gorgeous, but he was really very willful, I think is the nice way of putting it. So I remember it with some I think it's a fabulous institution, and I wish that everybody in my situation could have had a place like that, with wonderful teachers, and I do remember that they were just fabulous, and at the time I was, as I said to you before, I was very grateful. So I remember it with affection and some recollection of how difficult it was, a part of his being difficult, which he has been always, actually. Even though I love him dearly, he has never been an easy child. So I hope that it's still the same. I don't know that it is. I haven't been to the new improved sparkling modern you now.
Right. It looks very different, but the philosophy is still the same.
Mm-hmm.
And now when you look back, now that you went on to have a very rich mm-hmm. career,
mm-hmm.
and you've now retired, what did full-time childcare mean to you, now that you can look back mm-hmm. in retrospect?
Well, as I said, if God had meant women to work, he would have provided them with a housekeeper. I did have a housekeeper for a while, and then she got TB and had to leave. And all four of us had to go, but I was married by that time. I had to go have shots. It was, Simon and Toby, in fact, some of the teachers at Littlebrook School used to say, oh, yes, we know Simon and Toby, they're latchkey children, which meant they came home and there was nobody home. I don't know that that hurt them necessarily.
Were they judgmental about that?
The teacher? Oh, yeah, this particular teacher who said that, yes, very judgmental.
How did you handle that?
Just ignored it, pretty much. Mm. But, I mean, the kids used to, Toby in particular, used to come and see me at work. He'd come after school. They'd ride their bikes, you know, they rode their bikes to school after Littlebrook. By the time they were in middle school, they were both riding bikes to school. In fact, Toby is the person who got me to stop smoking. I never smoked heavily, but he was nine, and he showed up at the Woodrow Wilson School, and I was standing with a group of graduate students outside, and we were all smoking, and he said to me, sidled up to me, and he said, "Oh, Mom, I'm so embarrassed to see you smoking." And I stopped from that moment on. Saying he was embarrassed was almost worse than being judgmental. It was just, I was not about to embarrass my child again.
Wonderful. Well, it was such a wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed it. Are there any other things that you wanted to talk about or that you remember about
you know?
Those days?
Gosh. I remember that Betty Soloway moved to within a block of us, and I really enjoyed getting to know her a little bit. Just a little bit. I didn't get to know her well. I don't know if you're going to be in touch with the show, with either of the Showalters.
We would like to be.
Because I think they live in D.C. now. And he lives on the West Coast. That's where Toby used to go when he ran away from home. They just lived around the corner from us. But and he and Michael went to summer camp together.
And Michael was in his class.
Yes,
you know.
He was one of the one of the group. It was Leah, Joel, Michael, Toby, Halida, and Matt Hewlett from Hewlett's Shoe Store. Excuse me. And then he and Michael had a falling out, and they. Different wavelengths now, sadly, but he and Joel are still, I mean, he goes up to New Paltz and visits Joel, and he sees Leah, doesn't see Holly there, of course, because she lives in Costa Rica, but, it was very, what I remember is that it was very, very influential on Toby's life. And probably on mine, but more importantly, very influential on Toby's life and a lot of the values that he has. I know you say a lot of them came from me, and obviously they would, but I think they were reinforced there. The value of equality particularly. Which, interestingly enough, the next generation seems to have it in spades, which is really, I look at my grandchildren, and they are so much more insistent on equality amongst their peers than we were. So maybe the world will be better eventually.
Let's hope it will.
Yeah. Thank you, Caroline.
Ruth Miller, thank you for a wonderful conversation. I've really enjoyed it, and I so appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. And you want me to sign?
This is the end of the interview.